The World's Great Novels. The National Broadcasting Company brings you the final episode in a four-part version of Emily Bronte's Wuthering Heights, another in our series of books that live, The World's Great Novels.
Are you asleep, Mr. Lockwood?
No, Mrs. Dean. Merely enjoying the sight of the burning logs.
Aye, it is a cheery sight on a chill evening. I brought you a pot of steaming coffee.
Oh, thank you.
I thought you might enjoy it in case you plan to sit up late reading.
I shall read tonight only if you force me to, Mrs. Dean.
What, sir?
I can't recollect how many evenings now I've hoped that you'd find time from your various duties as my housekeeper to finish the strange tale that surrounds Wuthering Heights and this house here.
Does my rambling interest you as much as all that, sir?
Well, I can think of little else, Mrs. Dean. In truth, when I rented Thrushcross Grange from Mr. Heathcliff for this year, I had no idea these English moors would prove so bleak and idle. Perhaps that in part accounts for my interest in your story, though I think I should find it just as absorbing if I heard it in busy London.
Well, sir, I'm flattered to say the least.
Then do take that rocker and continue.
Very well, sir.
You ended your narrative last time just after the death of Cathy Earnshaw Linton.
Yes, she died a few short hours after her little girl was born. Poor Mr. Linton was so distraught the baby had scant attention for a few weeks, but he was too good to be thoroughly unhappy long. Time brought him resignation and a melancholy sweetness, and he centered his whole life in little Catherine. He did not pray for Cathy's soul to haunt him as Heathcliff did.
Well, I've been wondering if perhaps after Cathy's death, Heathcliff might not have mellowed toward his wife, Isabella Linton, whom he married out of spite.
If only he had, sir. His treatment of poor Isabella grew worse and worse, until one day she finally fled from him.
Oh, I see.
She stopped for an hour here at Thrushcross Grange and then went on to the south of London to live, where a son was born to her some months later.
And did Heathcliff not try to follow her?
No, he was glad to be rid of the sight of her, I think. And his plan of revenge took a longer view than the daily tormenting of Isabella.
Oh? What plan was that, Mrs. Dean?
You shall understand, sir, as I continue. The next 12 years were the happiest of my life. They were spent peacefully and quietly here at Thrushcross Grange, caring for my darling little Cathy. The only disturbing event of that period was the death of Mr. Hindley Earnshaw.
Oh.
Though he'd fallen low through drink and gambling, Hindley and I had practically grown up together in the old days at Wuthering Heights, and so I felt compelled to go and assist at the last duties.
What are you doing here, Ellen Dean? We want no visitors from Thrushcross Grange.
I've come to see if I may be of any service with Mr. Hindley, Mr. Heathcliff.
He's beyond all help. He died like he lived, in a drunken stupor.
But he deserves a decent and Christian burial, sir.
Well, if you insist, then take care of the matter. But I bid you remember that the money for the whole affair will come out of my pocket.
Out of your pocket, sir?
Surely you're not surprised, Ellen. Hindley died completely in debt. His entire property is mortgaged to me. I am now the sole master of Wuthering Heights, Ellen.
But what is to become of his son, little Hareton, the rightful heir?
He is not the rightful heir, and he is mine. Mine. Funny, eh, Ellen? That the son of the man who tried to keep me a groveling slave is now dependent on me.
But certainly Hareton Earnshaw's not to blame. What do you propose to do with him?
Do? I'll tell you what I plan to do, Ellen. I shall rear him as pleases my fancy, and we'll see if one tree won't grow as crooked as another with the same wind to twist it. Yes, we'll see.
Well, sir, as the years went on, I scarcely ever saw Wuthering Heights, though 'twas but 4 miles away. For 'twas one place Edgar Linton had given strict instructions that his daughter Cathy should never visit.
Yes.
Those dozen years were happy enough. And then Mr. Linton got word from his sister Isabella that she was dying. and she begged him to come to London and bring her son Linton back to Thrushcross Grange. This Edgar Linton did, but he had only had the child in the house a few hours when Mr. Heathcliff sent a servant to the Grange.
I'm instructed to see Mr. Linton.
A very unlikely hour to be troubling people. What business brings you here tonight?
It's Master Linton I must speak to.
Mr. Linton is going to bed. Unless you have something particular to say, I'm sure he won't hear it now.
I must see him now. Which is his room?
See here. Well, if you insist, I shall announce you.
That's better.
Yes?
A servant is here from Wuthering Heights, sir, who insists upon seeing you.
Heathcliff has sent me for his lad, and I mustn't go back without him.
If there were any way I could avoid this, I would,
there must be some way, sir. The boy is not well at best, and to send him to that place.
But it would be a useless battle, Ellen. Tell Mr. Heathcliff that his son shall come to Wuthering Heights tomorrow.
But I have...
He is in bed and too tired to go the distance now. Ellen will bring him tomorrow morning.
So the next day I took the boy over the moors to Wuthering Heights. It was early and Hareton and Heathcliff had just finished breakfast.
Hello, Ellen. I feared I should have to come down and fetch my property myself. You've brought it, have you? Well, let us see what we can make of it.
Don't be afraid, Linton.
What a beauty. What a lovely, charming thing. Oh, curse my soul. But it's worse than I expected. And the devil knows I was not sanguine.
Sit down, Linton, dear. You're all a tremble.
So he is. Tut, tut, none of that nonsense. You're your mother's child entirely. Where is my share in the puling chicken?
I hope you'll be kind to the boy, Mr. Heathcliff, or you'll not keep him long.
I'll be very kind to him, you needn't fear. Only nobody else must be kind to him. Hareton, you infernal calf, be gone to your work.
I'm gone.
Yes, Ellen. My son is prospective owner of Thrushcross Grange, and I should not want him to die until I was certain of being his successor.
I don't quite understand. I...
Old Linton's will provided that if Edgar had no male heirs and Isabella did, Thrushcross Grange would go to Isabella's child. And her child is mine. I want the triumph of seeing my descendant fairly lord of their estates. That is the sole consideration which can make me endure the whelp. I despise him for himself and hate him for the memories he revives.
We at the Grange then lost all contact with young Linton as we had with the others at Wuthering Heights, and life settled back to its old pleasant way until Miss Cathy's 16th birthday. This 20th of March was a beautiful spring day, and Cathy was given permission to have a ramble on the edge of the moor with me in search of a colony of moor game. Her young legs kept so far ahead of me, she had run almost to Wuthering Heights before I could catch up with her. And when I did, I beheld a couple of persons arrest her, one of whom was Mr. Heathcliff. The other turned out to be Hareton Earnshaw, now quite grown.
I've neither taken nor found any of your game, and I didn't mean to take them. But Papa told me there were quantities around, and I wished to see the eggs.
And who is Papa?
Mr. Linton of Thrushcross Grange. I thought you did not know me, or you wouldn't have spoken in that way.
You suppose Papa is highly esteemed and respected, then?
And what are you?
Miss Cathy, we really must go back.
Is that man your son?
Hareton? No, he is not my son. But I have one, and you've seen him before. And though your nurse is in a hurry, I think both you and she would be better for a little rest. Will you just turn this nab of heath and walk into my house?
You really mustn't on any account, Miss Cathy.
Why? I'm tired of running and the ground is dewy. I can't sit here. Oh, let us go, Ellen.
Come, Ellen, hold your tongue. It will be a treat for her to look in on us. Hareton.
Aye.
Get forward with the lass. You shall walk with me, Ellen.
Come along, miss.
Oh, good. I'm so glad.
Mr. Heathcliff, it's very wrong. You know you mean no good, and there she'll see Linton, and all will be told as soon as we return, and I shall have the blame.
I want her to see Linton. He's looking better these few days. It's not often he's fit to be seen, he's such a weakling. But where's the harm in it?
I'm convinced you have bad design in encouraging her to enter your house.
My design is as honest as possible. I'll inform you of its whole scope. That the two cousins may fall in love and get married. I'm acting generously to your master, Ellen. His young chit has no expectations. And should she second my wishes, she'll be provided for at once as joint successor with Linton.
If Linton died and his life is quite uncertain, Catherine would be the heir.
No, she would not. There is no clause in the will to secure it so. His property would go to me. But to prevent disputes, I desire their union and am resolved to bring it about.
With great reluctance, I accompanied them to Wuthering Heights, where Heathcliff summoned poor Linton, then turned to Cathy.
Now, who is that? Can you tell?
Your son.
Yes, yes. But is this the only time you have beheld him? Think now. Oh, you have a short memory. Linton, don't you recall your cousin that you used to tease us so with wishing to see?
What? Linton? Why, he's taller than I am. Are you Linton?
Yes.
Naughty Ellen, to try to hinder me from entering. But I'll take this walk every morning in the future. Won't you be glad to see me, Linton?
Linton, speak up. What? He shall be happier than you know to have you. And quite crestfallen if you break your promise.
Naturally, Mr. Linton, Cathy's father, had to know of our visit. And though he was greatly troubled, he did not scold Cathy. He explained, as simply as possible, the way Heathcliff had treated Isabella, and then forbade Cathy ever to visit the Heights again. A week after that, he contracted a severe cold, which settled in his lungs and kept him abed most of the time. Catherine spent her days by his side, and my evenings were so busy with household affairs, I was not able to inquire how she spent that time. But one evening, I searched the house and could find no trace of her. The servants affirmed they had not seen her. I returned to her apartment, extinguished my candle, and waited. Well, miss.
Ellen?
Yes, where have you been riding at this hour? I saw you come in.
To the bottom of the park.
Oh, Catherine. You know you've been doing wrong, or you wouldn't be driven to tell me an untruth. That does grieve me.
Oh, but Ellen, I was so afraid of your being angry.
Well, I shan't be angry if you tell me the exact truth.
Well, I've been to Wuthering Heights, and I've never missed a day since Papa fell ill.
I thought as much.
I couldn't break my promise to Linton. It was not that I went to amuse myself, for I was often wretched the whole evening.
And why was that?
Because Linton gets cross with me so often. But I excuse him because he often feels ill. Once his father heard him speaking crossly to me, and he abused him terribly for doing it. So I told Linton he must whisper his bitter things to me.
Oh, that you should hear bitter words from anyone.
But, Ellen, I feel sorry for Linton. And when he's in a good mood, we do have a pleasant time together. Oh, now, Ellen, you've heard all. But you won't tell Papa, will you?
I'll make up my mind on that point tomorrow. It requires some thought. I thought it over aloud in my master's study, walking straight to his room from hers, relating the whole story. And the visits were stopped for good. But all winter and spring, suspiciously mature letters came from Linton to his Uncle Edgar, begging that he at least be allowed to meet Catherine on the moors for a visit. Meanwhile, Mr. Linton's health failed rapidly, and it was apparent that he had not much longer to live. Summer was already past its prime when he finally agreed that Cathy and Linton might meet on the moors. It was a close, sultry day when we reached the appointed spot where Linton lay on the heath, looking very pale and miserable. Why, Master Linton, how ill you do look.
Oh, Linton, you do look ill. Are you worse than usual?
No. Better. Better.
Oh, but you have been worse, I know. You're so much thinner than when last I saw you.
I'm tired, is all. And in the morning, I often feel sick. Papa says I grow so fast. Oh, please sit down. It's wearing to see anyone standing.
Linton, I don't think you wanted to see me at all. My father's very ill. Why did you call me from his bedside?
No, no, do not go. Oh, I cannot bear it. Catherine, I'm a traitor. I cannot tell you. But if you leave me, I shall be killed. Catherine, dear, my life is in your hands. You have said you loved me, and if you did, it wouldn't harm you. And Perhaps you will consent and he'll let me die with you.
Consent to what?
No, I dare not tell. My father threatened me and I dread him. I dread him.
Oh, well, keep your secret if you're a coward.
Be quiet, dear sweet Catherine. Here comes my father.
Well, Ellen, it is something to see you so near to my house. How are you at the Grange? The rumor goes that Edgar Linton is on his deathbed. How long do you think he will last?
I don't know.
Get up, Linton. Get up. Don't grovel on the ground there. Up this way.
I will, Father. Only let me alone or I shall faint.
You would imagine I was a devil himself to excite such horror. Be so kind as to walk home with him, will you, lass? He shudders if I touch him.
My father has forbidden me to enter Wuthering Heights again.
Come now. My house is not stricken with the plague. You shall have tea before you go home. Come now.
My first instinct told me not to enter, and yet Linton was so miserable we were both moved to pity for him. But once inside, Heathcliff locked and bolted the door, and we soon realized we were prisoners. When he left the room, we rushed over to Linton. Master Linton, you know what your diabolical father is after, and you must tell us.
Yes, Linton, you must.
Papa wants us to be married. And he knows your papa wouldn't let us marry now, and he's afraid of my dying if we wait. So we are to be married in the morning, and you are to stay here all night.
Why, that man is mad or thinks us fools, every one. Do you imagine...
Be quiet, please be quiet.
But, Linton, sniveling again. You're pining for pure love, are you not?
Mr. Heathcliff, don't you see? If I stay here tonight, papa will be miserable. He shall think me lost. Oh, let me go home. I promise to marry Linton. I do love him.
Miss Linton, I shall enjoy myself remarkably in thinking your father will be miserable. You could have hit on no surer way of fixing your residence under my roof for the next 24 hours. As to your promise to marry Linton, I shall take care you shall keep it, for you shall not quit this place till it is fulfilled.
For a week we were kept prisoners at Wuthering Heights, and during that time, Heathcliff had Cathy and Linton married. I was allowed to return before Catherine, but fortunately, she persuaded Linton to help her escape in time to be by her father's bedside when he died. The evening after the funeral, we were seated in the library when Heathcliff walked in without even the ceremony of knocking. He was master now and availed himself of the master's privilege. When Catherine saw him, she rose with an impulse to dash out.
Stop! No more runnings away. I've come to fetch you home. And I hope you'll be a dutiful daughter and not encourage my son to further disobedience. I was embarrassed how to punish him when I found he had helped you escape. He is such a cobweb. A pinch would have annihilated him. But you'll see by his look that he received his due.
Why not let Catherine continue here and send Master Linton to her? As you hate them both, you'd not miss them.
I'm seeking a tenant for the Grange. And I want my children about me, to be sure. Besides, the lass owes me her services for her bed. I am not going to nurture her in luxury and idleness. Make haste and get ready now.
I shall. Linton is all I have to love in the world. And though you've done what you could to make him hateful to me and me to him, you cannot make us hate each other.
You are a boastful champion. But it is not I who will make him hateful to you, but his own sweet spirit. He is as bitter at gall at your desertion and its consequences. I heard him draw a pleasant picture to Zilla of what he would do if he were as strong as I. The inclination is there, and his very weakness will sharpen his wits to find a substitute for strength.
With those words, he took her away, and I've not seen her since. Linton died a short month later. Heaven only knows what she has had to endure in that place. Your report of her when you visited Wuthering Heights shortly after your arrival here, Mr. Lockwood, was the first news I've had of my lady. I can well imagine from your description the alterations in her personality.
That was the end of Mrs. Dean's narrative, at least for that time. You see, it's some 6 months now since that evening in front of the fire at Thrushcross Grange. A week later, I went back to London on business. And I don't mind saying I'd had my fill of the bleak moorlands. But when my year's lease of Thrushcross Grange came to a close, I went back to settle accounts with Mr. Heathcliff and tell him I had no desire to occupy it further. An amazing change seems to have occurred at the Heights. Flowers were blooming around it in bright little patches, and there was about the whole place what seemed, though I could scarcely believe it, a happy air. I was even more surprised to find my old friend Ellen Dean in the kitchen.
Mr. Lockwood, you should have given us notice you were coming.
Well, I only want to finish my business with your master, Mrs. Dean.
What business, sir?
About the rent.
Oh, well, then you must settle with the lady of the house. Or rather, me. She has not learned to manage her affairs yet.
Well,
oh, you look surprised. You've not heard of Heathcliff's death?
Heathcliff dead? How long ago?
3 months since. But sit down and I'll tell you all about it.
Gladly. I've wondered many times about this strange house and its occupants. Go ahead, Mrs. Dean. Go ahead.
I was summoned to Wuthering Heights within a fortnight of your leaving us, and I obeyed joyfully for Catherine's sake. Mr. Heathcliff, who seemed strangely altered, did not explain his reason for sending for me except to say that I should keep Catherine out of his sight. This meant a great part of the time she stayed in the kitchen with me. And, of course, Hareton Earnshaw spent a great deal of time by the fire there, too. And usually, Cathy laughed at his ignorance and taunted him cruelly. But gradually, a change came over her attitude. She was lonely, needed companionship, and she began to make small overtures of friendship. But Hareton only growled or cursed at her. Finally, one day, as we three sat before the kitchen fire...
I know why Hareton never speaks when I'm in the kitchen. He's afraid I'll laugh at him. Ellen, what do you think? He began to teach himself to read once, and because I laughed, he burned the books.
Go away and let me be.
Hareton, if I gave you a book, would you take it now?
I want none of your books.
Oh, Hareton, please, I've found out that... I should like you to be my friend now. Oh, Hareton, do you hear?
Get off, will you?
No, you must listen to me.
Will you go to the devil and let me be? I'll have naught to do with you and your mucky pride.
You should be friends with your cousin, Mr. Hareton, since she repents of her sauciness. That would do you a great deal of good. It would make you another man to have her for a companion.
A companion? Ha! She hates me and does not think me fit to wipe her shoon.
It is not I who hate you, it's you who hate me. You hate me as much as Mr. Heathcliff does.
You're an infernal liar. Why have I made him angry by taking your part time and again? And that when you sneered at and despised me.
I didn't know you took my part. And I was so miserable and bitter at everyone. But now I thank you and beg you to forgive me. What else can I do? Well, perhaps this kiss will convince you. There.
Well, miss. I must say that's a little bold.
What else could I do, Ellen? He wouldn't shake hands and he wouldn't look. I had to show him some way I like him. Oh, say you'll forgive me, Hareton, do. Oh,
but, Cathy,
And you'll be my friend?
You'll be ashamed of me every day of your life.
I shall not, for I shall teach you to read as good as I. Oh, come now, let us begin with this book here.
The intimacy thus commenced grew rapidly. I was afraid it would greatly anger Mr. Heathcliff, but, as I said, he was acting so strangely, going off for days at a time and eating scarcely once in 24 hours, that he took little notice of their attachment. And when he finally did, he simply stared into the fire and said,
"It is a poor conclusion, is it not, Ellen? An absurd termination to my violent exertions. I get levers and mattocks to demolish the two houses, and when everything is ready and in my power, I find not the will to lift a slate off either roof. Where is the use?" It sounds as if I had become suddenly charitable. Well, it is far from being the case. I have merely lost the faculty of enjoying their destruction. Ellen, I want to call Mr. Green here and make my will.
Mr. Heathcliff, there's plenty of time for that. You're a young man and healthy.
No, change is working daily.
I feel it coming nearer and nearer.
Then you have no fear of death?
Fear? It is my fondest hope. At last my body would be able to join my soul, which was buried with Catherine Earnshaw 18 years ago.
Heathcliff took to wandering about the moors constantly. He hardly ever spoke to us, though he always had a look of happiness on his face. One night he returned wet to the skin from a driving rain, and when I went to call him the next morning, his eyes met mine so keen and fierce I started, and he seemed to smile. But when I put my hand to his forehead, I found he was stark and dead. Some folk about say he and Kathy still walk the moors together, but you'd say idle talk, and so say I.
Captain, come in now. You must have another lesson.
Only if I get a kiss before I start, and one for every time I mispronounce a word.
Oh, that's the surest way I know of having you learn nothing.
Those two seem quite happy.
Aye, they are, sir. And my happiest moment shall be at their wedding, which will take place on New Year's Day. Will you not speak to them?
No, Mrs. Dean. No. From the look on Hareton's face, he should never forgive me if I was so crude as to interrupt his bliss.
Oh, Mr. Lockwood.
But I should like for you to deliver to them my heartiest wishes. My walk home was lengthened by a diversion in the direction of the kirk. I sought and soon discovered the three headstones in the slope next to the moor. The middle one, Kathy Earnshaw Linton's, was gray and half buried in the heath. Edgar Linton's only harmonized by the turf and moss creeping up its foot. Heathcliff's still bare. I lingered round them under that benign sky. Watched the moths fluttering among the heath and harebells. Listened to the soft wind breathing through the grass. And wondered how anyone could ever imagine unquiet slumbers for the sleepers in that quiet earth.
Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte is one of the world's great novels, brought to you each week by the National Broadcasting Company. Next week, World's Great Novels will not be heard, but on February 6th, we invite you to hear the first episode in a three-part version of Kenilworth, that exciting novel of intrigue in Queen Elizabeth's court by Sir Walter Scott. To add to your enjoyment of this series, we recommend the Handbook of the World's Great Novels, which you may obtain by sending 25 cents to World's Great Novels, Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27, New York. That's Post Office Box 30, Station J, New York 27. Wuthering Heights was adapted for radio by Agnes Eckhart. The music was composed by Emil Soderstrom, and the entire production was under the direction of Homer Heck. Boris Aplon was featured as Heathcliff, and Geraldine Kay as Ellen Dean. Catherine Linton was played by Jean Maury, Hareton Earnshaw by Charles Mountain, Linton Heathcliff by Charles Flynn, Lockwood by Jonathan Hole, Edgar Linton by John Cannon, and The Servant by Marvin Pisner. This is Hugh Downs. This program comes to you from Chicago and is a presentation of the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.